Good afternoon, everybody. Today is April 8th, 2006, just about 1 o'clock. This is the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. Welcome to the committee. We have just kind of more of a discussion on two different topics today. No particular bills to move on the first one with greenhouse gas impact assessments and update with MnDOT and some of the local communities and partners that provide help build our road systems and are impacted by that. And then second half of the meeting at about 2:25, we will take up the second part of the agenda talking about the aggregate ready mix supply. And there is a bill that we'll just have introduced just simply for we're not even going to move that bill but the bill just got introduced, so we'll describe that bill and then use that as an opportunity to discuss that issue. I don't have minutes in front of me, but we do have a quorum. Representative Tabke, if you have had an opportunity to look at the minutes, would you move to the approval of the minutes of previous meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tabke moves the minutes of March 25th, 2026. All those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are adopted. Thank you. So first we'll invite MnDOT up to present to us. Mr. Solberg is the Assistant Commissioner for Sustainability Planning and Program Management, according to my notes. And Mr. Rudin is Government Affairs, or maybe a fancier title, I don't know. That's good. Thank you for joining us. We've talked previously a little bit about the presentation. If you could just, I invited them to come just give the committee and stakeholders kind of an update in this venue of the committee of where we're at on putting together our greenhouse gas law that was passed in 23-24, what still needs to be done. I think there's a PowerPoint, so I'll turn it over to you. As you know, please introduce yourself for the audio record and then proceed with your presentation, and thank you for being here. And members, we do have a couple people that will hold questions until we get through kind of some of the testifiers, and then we can have committee discussion. So please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. My name is John Solberg. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Sustainability, Planning, and Program Management at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And joining me today?
Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs.
So today I was asked by Chair Kosnick to give an update on the greenhouse gas assessment process that's been under developed for the past 2 years within the Department of Transportation. So I did think it was appropriate to start out with the timeline of what's been happening with greenhouse gas assessment. First and foremost, legislature passed the law to move that in 2023, and then again was updated in 2024, which added the portfolio assessment. So as of January 1st of 2025, through the development with the Technical Advisory Committee meeting, offsets that have been built, constructed, contracted are eligible to be used. The assessment itself came under requirement for individual projects starting February 1st of 2025. Now, the next important date to really think about for this assessment is August 1st of 2027, and that is when the portfolio assessment is to start, be put in place. And that really is for the 2031 project, program of projects. So really to start this off, it's important to understand what is the assessment, and it's really a three-step process. That first process or first step is determining if the project needs to be assessed, and really that comes from really three conditions. One, it's a major project, and then two, it's either a new interchange or it's a lane addition over 2,500 feet in length. So that's the first piece that would go into this. It's important to note that a project as initially planned could come with all sorts of alternatives, and that this process only pertains to those which I already mentioned, a lane expansion or a new interchange. So, for instance, in project development, if there are other solutions that would meet those needs, for instance, what we refer to as J-turns, or if there were other transportation solutions that would meet that, those don't have to go through the assessment process. Couple things before you go to the next page. So what's important to understand is the second step there is calculate the vehicle miles traveled. This is a relatively straightforward process. We take the annual average daily traffic, and we multiply that out over the full year to understand what the VMT, the vehicle miles traveled, are for that particular roadway. The third step is calculating greenhouse gas emissions. And to do that, really what we end up using is a federal tool that's called MOVES that has the basis of the vehicle types that are available in Minnesota, that are predominant in Minnesota, and the emissions caused by those vehicles. So therefore, what you do is you multiply the number of vehicle miles traveled times the emissions to come up with the total emissions that are on the system for a particular section of roadway. So for the committee's understanding, I thought it would be nice to know what kind of a scenario would be that would take place. And so what I have in front of you is both a list of illustrative examples, for instance, Minnesota 55 in Bigville. Bigville, clearly, if you know your geography, is not a town in Minnesota, but is representative of a rural community with low vehicle or low ADT on the system. And we have some suburban, urban, and urban core examples, which are more like real projects that are in the planning process, have been discussed, and are making their way through the project development process. A couple things to note in this particular scenario is, and we'll concentrate on the Wilmer example, Highway 23. So in this particular instance, what we're looking at is approximately 5 miles of new lanes on Highway 23. Then this particular example is based on a real world example. It's 2.5 miles in each direction. And so what we end up doing is we multiply that, again, ADT on that particular section or would-be section. And there's a couple ways to do that to figure out the vehicle miles traveled. You can use a regular traffic model, travel demand model, or there's a system we call elasticity that's based on historical examples of similar roadways. And so it utilizes that and what the result of those roadways and changes in those have been to come up with a calculation that gives you the new one. We do ask our applicants in the assessment process, of which there are none, I will make that clear, we haven't had a formal project come through the process, but we ask them to use the two methods and compare them so that we know if we're in the similar results for both models. In addition, I'll just note that in addition to these lane expansion models, we are in the process of developing four for interchanges in those same kind of contexts so that we can use those and provide those for applicants so that they have a guide of how they could potentially move forward through the process. So now that through the process we've established what the emissions would be from any kind of new infrastructure, we go into the next piece, which is identifying the offsets and the emissions that are available or could be available to offset that particular project. As you'll note in state statute that there were 10 specific types of emissions offsets, but there's really an 11th, which is in the statute that allows the commissioner, with the recommendation of the Technical Advisory Committee, to entertain different types of offsets that maybe aren't established in state statute. So it gives a lot of flexibility. And on the presentation in front of you, you'll note that there are 7 of those currently that have asterisks by them. Those have calculations that we've associated with those various offsets. So if you go into the transit expansion system, we've developed a scenario for bus routes from BRT 37 different techniques is what we're calling those for those seven that have been developed. We continue to develop the ones that do not have an asterisk. Those take a little more time, but I will note things like natural systems, land acquisition, parking management are probably much lower on the offset than simply looking at transit expansion and land use densities. MnDOT, and I'll just, in addition to this, I'll also offer, MnDOT has been in cooperation with some local units of government as well as making sure that we are communicating with our counties and cities, that we are open to be able to help with identifying these. Currently, again, we don't have a specific project that is going through the process, but those that have asked for help, we've been able to offer and help guide them through the process wherever we can. Now, continuing with that Highway 23 example, what I provided in front of you is an illustrative potential offset plan for that particular project. Couple things of note as you look at it. There's both infrastructure and kind of policy direction offsets that are included in this. You'll also notice that in accordance with state statute, which says the offsets must start in close proximity to the project and then move out beyond that, that in this particular example, 39% of those, or sorry, 61% of those are in the community, and then it's the offsets have been broadened out to a regional aspect. Of note, in this particular scenario, what we did, had our consultant look through comprehensive plans in the area, so things like active transportation infrastructure was derived from the Kandiyohi County Active Transportation Plan. But as you'll note, or may understand from this, that really these are not simple direct types of solutions that are traditionally associated with developing a project. These may reach beyond what is typically called involved in project engineering. They may go into various policy or various other government entities to be able to find offsets that may help with a particular project. I'll note one of the largest offsets that we're seeing in this particular scenario is land use and density. So in this particular case, changing a land use residential density from approximately 2 units per acre to 9 units per acre. So that's an example, and that would be located, additional benefits located when it's near transit. So as you can see there, that's a total in this Highway 23 example, about 5,000 metric tons that could be saved. I think it's important to understand that the total transportation emissions in the state of Minnesota are about 36 million metric tons. So an individual project or individual offsets are a small piece of that, but without understanding that larger magnitude, it's really difficult to understand the next piece, which I'll go into, which is really the portfolio. So what you've just heard is really where we are with this whole greenhouse gas assessment process. The individual project is we have a process that is established, and we have offsets that we can calculate.
Before we go to the portfolio, I just wanted to pause on this Wilmer example. Do you have an estimate of what those offsets would cost on this particular project?
For this particular project, I don't have an estimate that I can say in front of us, but what we've understood from our development working with other states that have gone through this process, that a project like this might be 30 to 50% of the additional cost. It's really hard to estimate because unlike estimating aggregate costs or those sorts of things, this is really a matter of what is infrastructure versus what is a policy type of decision. So infrastructure would be more direct cost to transportation. Policy decisions such as fueling or electrification may have different costs.
Okay, thank you for that. We'll continue on the portfolio timeline.
So before I start with the portfolio, I think it's important to understand how the portfolio fits into MnDOT's project development process. So as you see before, you have a list of activities or dates. Really, what I'm trying to clarify here is that the MnDOT STIP, the portfolio, or our portfolio of projects, really starts that development in January of each year and concludes in about October of each year. It takes that long to develop the projects, work with our local partners to put those together, go through a public process of vetting those to get those submitted to Federal Highway Administration and approved. You can see in the middle of that is really the implementation timeline of the portfolio assessment, August 1st of 2027. So I think it's important for you all to understand that in order for MnDOT to really move this into what would be that 2031 project year, the only way we could effectively do that is to do that in that first period, first quarter of the year, January through March. We would have to have the projects, the portfolio, determined, otherwise it could not enter the STIP. And so therefore, if we get into this situation where we only implemented it in August, we would be beyond kind of the expectation of when our local partners would have developed projects, only for them to maybe potentially realize that it couldn't be added into the STIP. So we will have to, we will be developing that assessment process to try and meet that first quarter of 2027. So really with the portfolio decision, we've been concentrating up to this point on the individual project process. So now we're moving into the Technical Advisory Committee, which again was established by state legislature. There's two major questions that still have to be developed and answered, and that is, what is the portfolio definition? And then how do we assess that portfolio? So part of the reason the question is, what is a portfolio definition? It wasn't established in the statute, but two, it makes a big difference in what are the projects and what are the impacts of the offsets. So as I mentioned before, 36 million metric tons in transportation emissions in the state of Minnesota. If we were to go to, for instance, the entire STIP, so all the projects for 4 years, that would be a substantial portion of that 36 million. If it looked like it were only MnDOT projects that were in that, it may be a little bit smaller. If it were only types of expansion projects or MPO projects that were developed in the portfolio assessment, that might be yet a different answer. So we really have to look at that and what is a portfolio so that we develop a system that is not only successful for the project development process, but also meets the intent of the state statute. The second part of that question is, how do we assess the portfolio? So as I've already talked about, we have ways to assess individual projects. So do we assess individual projects within a portfolio, so one at a time, very laborious, but also very detailed? Or do we move to different tools that we have available to us, either through work with USDOT or with Georgetown University, University of Minnesota, who have been partners in this, to maybe something that's a little bit in between? And one of the issues is, as you move up away from the individual project, you may lose specificity. And that could be both in the expansion project and or the offsets. So, or it could end up being a combination of tools that we use so that we can provide the best available answer for the assessment of the portfolio. So with that, here are some of the challenges, of course, that we continue and have worked through in some degree. So expansion projects, we know, generate emissions. That's a given just based on its ADT multiplied ultimately times the emissions. There's going to be more emissions if it's for economic development or it's for safety and it's a safer route. People will use that route and in likelihood bring more vehicles and therefore more emissions. So we have that. Offsetting, we know, is difficult only from the standpoint of it's not within the standard engineering and planning process for transportation projects. And so it reaches beyond what is typically associated with that project development process. Difficult, But also, it's a process that requires change. So we have to lay out those processes in order for not only our department, but our local partners to be able to participate wholly in that process.
Can you clarify for us, when you're looking at an expansion project and doing the vehicle mile assessment, are you doing the new extra vehicle miles traveled or the total on the project? Like, so there's a road currently gets 10,000 cars a day or something, however many vehicle miles, and then you add capacity. Are the assessments on the whole vehicle miles traveled or just the new capacity?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. So the assessment currently on the individual projects is on the additional capacity. It is not on the entire roadway system. So, for instance, if that particular roadway currently has, we'll just say, 10,000 vehicles on it, and through the model it ends up showing that there will be 12,000, we would be looking at the emissions caused by that additional 2,000 vehicles through the process.
Go ahead, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a process question. You had asked us up front to hold questions until the end. You've chimed in with a couple of questions, clarifying questions that are fine. I just want to understand how.
Yeah, I'm trying to ask clarifying questions a little bit.
So clarifying questions would be okay for us.
The chair's prerogative, but
just for you then.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I just want to understand the process. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So continuing with this, really, the last point I was going to make here is other policy approaches may be needed to help reduce transportation emissions. So we know that vehicles create emissions, but we also know that part of the emissions picture is what is the fueling of those vehicles and then how far or how much do you travel. And so when we look at what we can do within the transportation industry, that is limited when we don't have other policy considerations that could be used as tools to potentially significantly reduce emissions. And a couple of those, just as an example, would be clean fuels or electrification or potential land use regulation. So, also want to acknowledge, Mr. Chair, some of the stakeholder feedback we've had during the project development process. We have heard, obviously, questions about cost during the project development process, but along with that, I'd also say we've heard recognition for the need to reduce emissions to go with that. So it's not a we don't want to do this completely. It's a yes, we understand the problem. Is this potentially the only way in which we can reduce emissions? We've had significant questions, I think, about the offset and administration, the tracking and administration of projects. I think as I've laid out and I talked about the complications of those offsets, could be policy level at a city, could be individual projects that might be coming out of a parks department. Our local partners have expressed the concern or maybe just simply question about how do we make sure that all those are captured. Again, admission in the difficulty of developing a process that works efficiently. So I think we have a very good process that can work for individual projects. While still complex, it will work. However, it's not without saying that adds additional tasks or additional work to project development process. Been questions about when it's appropriate to start the process, and I think this is one where traditional project development processes start with kind of planning and then move into this engineering for a project. What we've been telling partners and as well as inside the agency, if you expect that this particular process would work well after you've received initial funding for a project, you are going to be mistaken because the complicated nature of the offsets and potential project development process with those alone adds additional time. We know federal funds come with specific timelines on when they need to be spent. So if we're working with federal funds, that puts even more stress on a project development process. However, that being said, when projects don't just come out of nowhere and enter engineering, they start with an idea somewhere. They start with a need and development of a purpose. And so during the process, what we really recommend is at that earliest stage, when you've identified a potential problem that you may want to fix, that's the appropriate time to also start having those discussions with the communities in which you're developing the project to, if nothing else, coordinate some of the actions taking place and look for additional potential policy help with that process. And then ultimately, there's questions about how does this process interact with other transportation policies and guidance. And I simply mention this because the federal administration has changed direction on their stance on emissions within transportation. As we know it right now for the Department of Transportation, we believe that this process will be able to continue to move forward. Federal Highway Administration has said that they will allow Minnesota to continue to move forward with this process with their project. What it does require, though, is that we will likely have to, instead of developing one environmental document that would cover a federal project and cover Minnesota needs, we will have to separate out environmental documents and create a federal document and a state document so that we can document the emissions and offset projects, which ultimately I would say the Federal Highway Administration does not want to see in their documents. So continued improvements. So, and then I'll just, I think I'm just about done here, Mr. Chair. I know we're almost out of time, so this is really the last slide with content, and that's really, this is some of the things we've done in the last year to improve the process. We still have to develop the portfolio method for the STIP and TIP, but we are testing additional policy approaches that maybe show significant reductions. We continue to work with researchers both in Georgetown and University of Minnesota to provide better and more accurate information to the process. We continue expanding that range of offset techniques. I mentioned 37. We're hoping to grow that significantly yet, but it does take time to develop those. And in the short term, again, we have no projects that are requesting that, but we will work with any applicants that do. And then, of course, refinement of those technical resources. So one of the things the state has done is develop the carbon estimator tool, and that works both for determining how much emissions there are on a particular project, but also for calculating the potential offsets for a project. So we put that into one single document now, one tool that eases the burden for anybody that would use that process in the future. We've also developed that interactive portal for partners to be able to work through a project with us. And I think that really concludes my comments, Mr. Chair. I do have just a summary here at the end. And that's really that MnDOT has established the process to assess project emissions generated by projects. We have methodologies based on national and local research for calculating those emissions. And as I mentioned, the different strategies in which we can calculate those. The assessment procedure is well-founded in current transportation research best practices, so we've tried to incorporate those everywhere we can to ensure not only consistency but accuracy. And capacity expansions we know will increase emissions, but reducing emissions via capital investments alone is difficult. So that's why, again, I mentioned earlier the need to implement additional policies and or direction that allows things like electrification or clean fuels to be introduced into that, because they are simply more than just what a community can do, but maybe more what a state can do. And really additional policy and legislation will be necessary to reach the state transportation climate goals. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Since we did have a few more people that wanted to provide some testimony, we will go with Commissioner Bingham, Jepson, Mr. Culver, Mr. Pettis, in that
Chair,
order.
I think that folks had some questions for MnDOT first.
MnDOT will be here. I just want to get those people on there. There's a couple other people that wanted to testify, and then we'll go back to the questions.
Okay.
So,
Sounds like we didn't really give you a time frame of, but keep it around 3 minutes, hopefully. We appreciate your commitment to be here, so go ahead with your prepared remarks. But
thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be as brief as I can be for a former senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Washington County Commissioner Carla Bigham, and I'm here today on behalf of AMC and MICA. Washington County, I'm going to get right to it. Washington County has a major project directly in the pipeline that falls squarely under this law. The grade-separated interchange at Trunk Highway 36 and Trunk Highway 120 Century Avenue on the Oakdale-North St. Paul border. Washington County is the co-lead on this project alongside MnDOT, Ramsey County, and the two cities. As a project sponsor, the county will be directly involved in performing the GHG and the VMT impact assessment and in developing a plan to identify, coordinate, and pay for whatever offsets are required. The Trunk Highway 36 and Century Avenue intersection is the last remaining signal-controlled at-grade intersection on Trunk Highway 36 west of Stillwater Boulevard. It has one of the highest crash rates in the metropolitan area, historically more than double the average for comparable intersection. Grade separation is the only viable long-term safety solution. Construction is estimated to cost $50 million or more. And yet, before this project can even enter the STIP, it must complete a full GHG and VMT impact assessment and have fully funded offset plan in place. Based on the comparable interchange projects, we are looking at approximately 11,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide to offset over 20 years. At MnDOT's own estimate range of 20 to 40% added to project costs, that is adding $10 to $20 million just in offset spending with no identified funding source. We do not oppose efforts to reduce harmful emissions, and we support a multimodal transportation system as evidenced by our county leading a significant investment in construction of the Gold Line BRT in the East Metro. But emissions shouldn't be the overreaching factor that determines what investments are made to improve our highway infrastructure. We need to balance climate considerations against jobs, economic development, commerce, mobility, and most importantly, safety. What concerns us most is that even when we identify what the offset should be, we, as counties, have little to no control over whether they will actually happen. The Trunk Highway 36 and Century Avenue project is a great example. The intersection sits on the Washington-Ramsey County line with Oakdale on one side, North St. Paul on the other. The offset categories with the greatest emissions impact are transit service expansion, travel demand management, and zoning for higher density. And those decisions are made by the Met Council, who I'll get to in a second, the cities and private developers. Washington County cannot compel any of them to act. And the Gateway State Trail, for those of you that know, is the busiest bike and ped route in Minnesota, already runs through this area. And so any trail improvement built as a part of the interchange design simply replaces what is already there. It cannot be double counted as a new offset. We are left holding accountability for a climate outcome we can't deliver on our own. Washington County is also home to one of the fastest growing communities in the metro, Woodbury. But we are not responsible for how Woodbury plans for its growth and can't force them to change density requirements in order to build needed transportation infrastructure to support 25% growth over 25 years. Probably one of the most concerning issues is with the Met Council and their lack of public comment on the impact of this legislation. See, we have comprehensive plans, and that's Chapter 473 in the statute, and it contains that the plan has to contain objectives, policies, standards, and programs to guide public and private land use, development, redevelopment, and preservation for all lands and waters within jurisdiction of the local government unit. So you're blowing up the comp plans that cities and counties are required to submit because you cannot track all of the rapid development that would happen with this. So that's extremely concerning. And furthermore, when you rezone developed communities for greater density, you would overwhelm the city's existing water, wastewater infrastructure for making this less than a realistic option with the, which the Met Council plans for the region of wastewater. So it's just, it's concerning that there's been a lack of public vetting of this proposal without Met Council chiming in on it. And then, you know, we do appreciate MnDOT in doing its you know, creating the framework for implementation of this law, but with so much of the mitigation beyond its purview and ours, we don't understand how this is going to work and will have a chilling effect on necessary highway. And two final points before I turn it over to my esteemed colleague from Anoka County, who's a former city council member herself. MnDOT, when we met with them, said that this will result in fewer projects and they'll be more expensive. And that's concerning, because we have safety issues and we all have revenue problems. But, Mr. Chair, as you know, I spent 9 years serving in the legislature between both chambers, so I learned a little something. And if I were in your seats when I needed a project like the one that I just explained, I would introduce a bill exempting it from this process. And that, you know, if I can think of it, you know, somebody else already has. So you can't have a program that is not going to get you the results you want if it cannot be implemented. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Bingham. Mentioned a few things that I hadn't thought about, so I appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll go with Commissioner Jepsen. Thanks for being here, and just go ahead and introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, my name is Julie Jepsen. I'm an Anoka County Commissioner representing the cities of Blaine and Spring Lake Park. Next week, a major MnDOT safety project is coming to my community and is scheduled to open for bids next week, Thursday. Four grade-separated intersections on Trunk Highway 65. Four of the five most dangerous and deadly intersections in the state, all within 2 miles. The project will cost about $180 million, funded through 17 different sources, including support from this legislature, and we are grateful, very grateful for that partnership. But MnDOT has told us that if this project had been delayed, the additional costs for the VMT GHG offset requirements would have ranged from $30 to $100 million. Just in the immediate offset expenses. That does not include any dollar amount for long-term operating or maintenance obligations. After years of assembling funding for this life-saving work, those added costs would have pushed the project out even further and, frankly, left more people at risk on a corridor we all know is already dangerous. County support reducing greenhouse gas. County support reducing vehicle miles traveled. We are actively working towards those goals already through our public health departments and agreements made with the MPCA. The concern is the law and how it's written. It's simply not workable. MnDOT has told counties that we will need to be more selective, meaning fewer projects, more scaled back designs, and more delays on top of already significant statewide funding gaps. So in MnDOT's Highway 23 case study, which they presented to us on counties, which they presented to counties from District 10 with the Association of Minnesota Counties, so the metro area, they presented these slides on February 18. But there were a few slides that were missing from today's presentation. So the Highway 23 case study was presented 5 miles, 2.5 miles in each direction, and for safety reasons would require $9 to $34 million in offset costs. And $34 million isn't the max. There's way more variables, way more unknowns that we don't even know at this time. And in that example, the most effective offset depended on zoning changes from a city. That city is St. Cloud. Zoning changes for a city that's over 60 miles away from Wilmer. Something no one has the authority to require, and that is unrealistic to expect. Counties are already under budget strain. Adding 30 to 50% to project costs for offsets we cannot guarantee are viable is deeply concerning. We also need clarity. What happens when these agencies aren't ready? What happens when cities and MPOs or transit providers decline to participate in these offsets. Local governments don't have the authority to compel these actions, yet we are responsible for the outcomes. Please do not force a choice between safety and environmental goals. These safety projects protect everyone: drivers, walkers, bicyclists, businesses, transit riders, freight, and counties have limited revenue tools. So I must ask, how much should property taxes go up to meet these mandates? Right now, it feels like counties are treading water, with multiple cost pressures pulling us down from the federal, from the state. We're simply asking for help in getting this to a workable yes. Pausing to address these concerns is not defeat. It is responsible governance. We want to be partners in achieving reductions in GHG and VMT. We just need a path that is realistic and implementable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have Mark Culvers and Daryl Pettis, I think, in that order. Or I think I got it backwards. And then I believe there's County Engineer Robegent is here as available to answer questions, as is Engineer Mark Joe McPherson. Or did they want to, did you guys want to testify just if there's questions? Okay. Well, gentlemen, welcome to the committee. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. We'll start on this side, or whoever wants to go first, just introduce yourself and for the record, and then proceed with your testimony. And commissioners, appreciate the issues that you raised. So welcome. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Daryl Pettis. I am a city. Good afternoon, committee. My name is Daryl Pettis. I am a city council member from the city of St. Peter. I currently serve on the Coalition of Greater Minnesota's Transportation Committee. I also serve on the District 7 MnDOT District 7 ATP, representing elected cities, elected official for cities over 5,000. Today, I'd like to give you a little bit of background on St. Peter. St. Peter is located roughly 75 miles to the southwest of here in the Minnesota River Valley, and we're located along Trunk Highway 169. 169 is the major corridor that connects Mankato, southwestern Minnesota, to the Twin Cities. In the past 25 years, there's been substantial projects completed along 169. Back at the Ventura administration, plans were put together, planning was done, and the coalition, along with the Trunk Highway 169 coalition, along with transportation partners, cities, counties, and MnDOT, approximately 11 interchanges have been constructed, numerous J-cuts, J-turns have been implemented, and capacity has been increased along this route, greatly improving the accessibility and transportation options for the residents of southern Minnesota. I feel that if this bill, if this law had been put into place many years ago, those projects would have been few and far between. Most of those projects were scraped together, put together the way they were, and additional cost on that would be very difficult to cover. The city of St. Peter itself, we do have one remaining project that's on 169. We were asked in 1991 to start putting plans together to reconstruct the last half mile of 169 within our city. And we are now on the list for 2028. So a mere 35 years later, we think we're going to get our project done. Luckily, I don't believe this project would qualify because it's currently a four-lane divided highway, and we're not looking at adding lanes. So it has taken 35 years to kind of complete the work on 169 with our community. I have been involved in the transportation industry for just about 40 years. In May of 1986, I started with a county. So I've been in this game for quite a while. During that time, I have seen a gradual erosion of the effectiveness of the dollars that go into our state and local funds, our gas tax, our license tabs. Many years ago, we struggled with the concept of prevailing wage, and then we went on to the Wetlands Conservation Act, the NPDES permit requirements for stormwater, endangered species, bats, bees, bugs, butterflies. All of those items add cost to how we deliver projects. I spent about 25 years working, or 24 years working as a county engineer, and I spent about 11 years working as a county administrator. So I've been in this business for quite a while. The amount of money that it takes to build roads has gone up dramatically while the funding has not kept pace. We in St. Peter do support reductions in greenhouse gases. Our city has recently hired a sustainability coordinator. We are a member of SMPA, that's our Minnesota Power. Our power comes from, we'll be hopefully carbon free by 2030, that is our goal. We do offer electric charging stations within our community, and we do work to reduce greenhouse gases. We do have programs for reducing the number of gas water heaters within our municipal electric utility. We do run a small transit system with City of Le Sueur and City of St. Peter go together, run a small transit system to cut down on trips and provide transit to elderly and to the kids within our community. We've taken a proactive approach towards carbon reduction, but our fear is if this continues to go on, the costs are risen or increased for our the DOTs, the counties. Our project in 2028 may also be going away. These funds have to come from somewhere to pay for these things. If it's not the Trunk Highway Fund, is it the MSAS fund? Is it local property tax? Is it county property tax? Is it county local option sales tax? Is it city local option sales tax? Or ultimately, the one that every city council member really, really loves to do is, do we start assessing property owners along projects? We have that ability. We currently do assess property owners. Every city council member just loves going to public hearings when you're doing road assessments and street assessments, and the happy people we get to deal with doing that. So with that, we are not necessarily opposed to carbon dioxide and carbon reduction. However, we would like to see some form of funding or some type of an offset for funding so these projects can move forward. St. Peter without 169 is not economically viable. In the past 20 years, we've had a couple of storms or a couple of floods that have come through that have cut us off from 169 and our bridges across the Minnesota River, leaving us kind of on an island with access only in from the west. We understand what happens when 25,000 vehicles a day that pass on 169 do not pass through our community. It has a huge economic impact on our community. We need to keep these projects viable, and they need to be funded if that's the, if this is the direction we go. So with that, I thank you for your testimony and the opportunity to testify today. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Pettis. I appreciate your perspective and highlighting unfortunately, some realities that you would face in your council chambers of how to pay for this, and the constituents that you serve may not like that. Next, we'll go with our next testifier, Mr. Culver.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick, Chair Tapke, and members of the committee. My name is Mark Culver. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Brooklyn Park. I also serve as the City Engineer Representative on the, wait for it, Transportation Greenhouse Gas Emissions Impact Assessment Technical Advisory Committee. We haven't come up with a good acronym for that yet. I also served on the Transportation Greenhouse Gas Emissions Impact Mitigation Working Group, which was formed as part of the 2023 legislation that created the greenhouse gas impact mitigation requirements. And as you all know, that work group made several recommendations, one of which was to form the current Technical Advisory Committee. All that to say that my history and involvement on this issue has been extensive. I sat at the table in 2023 with Representative Kraft, along with my colleagues from other cities and counties, and with stakeholders on the other side of the proverbial table. We worked hard on trying to take this concept and make it work for the practitioners that deliver critical transportation improvement projects for our communities across the state. I want to take a moment to thank Chris Behrens, John Solberg, who presented earlier, and Maurice Roars for their work to lead the work group and the TAC through this process, and to MnDOT for listening to local agency partners as we work through this issue. With this said, as you have heard from the previous testifiers, it does seem as if we still have significant amount of work to do. I absolutely believe in climate change. I know we need to make changes in the way we design and build our infrastructure going forward. You've heard the same thing from other testifiers. I absolutely feel we need to make investments in our transportation system across the state. I don't think we have a choice there, and we need to fund that. And even with that knowledge and belief, I do not support this legislation, and I still believe it is going to have irreparable harmful impacts on the safety and economy of many communities, particularly growing communities, such as the city that employs me, Brooklyn Park, but particularly the rural communities. The requirements for both greenhouse gas emission reductions and offsets, as well as VMT reductions and offsets, are far too burdensome for well-meaning transportation projects. These requirements will very likely kill many long-planned projects on communities' transportation plans, simply because we can't afford the mitigation. Projects with overpasses, interchanges, and additional lanes. Projects that would support economic development in growing communities, but more importantly, projects that would take intersections with proven significant safety issues and grade separate those roadways. The members of the TAC are trying hard to figure out how to facilitate the responsible implementation of this legislation. And I give credit to the members of the TAC, some of them which are in this room today. We are working hard on this, and we're trying to figure this out within the boundaries of the existing legislation. With our input, MnDOT has published the Transportation Greenhouse Gas Emissions Impact Assessment document, which walks practitioners through the requirements of the analysis. This is the analysis that was used to create the examples Mr. Solberg shared with us today. But we still struggle with the logistics of the mitigation or the offsets. How do we actually calculate those? How do we provide accountability that those offsets actually happen at the level indicated? Who owns the offsets? How are they accounted for in a portfolio model? There are no easy answers to these questions, and the supporters of this legislation are no doubt watching very, very closely and waiting, as we all are, for the first expansion project subject to this analysis to be actually reviewed and approved. And to be honest, I fully expect that first project to face significant legal challenges and increased costs no matter how the TAC recommends approval. I don't have enough time today to fully communicate my concerns about this legislation and how it will impact needed transportation system improvements, but I want to move on to possible improvements. And as I've been trying to consider recommendations to make make this legislation easier to implement, I came up with two ideas and also talking with my colleagues. First, safety. My recommendation would be to identify a critical crash rate threshold, and if a project exceeded that number, it would be exempt from the mitigation requirements. For example, a proposed grade separation project that has a fatal and severe crash critical index higher than 1.0 would be exempt from the impact assessment. Again, removing a significant documented safety issue from the trunk highway. The other idea focuses on the portfolio model, which is set to be in effect starting in 2027, as Mr. Solberg indicated. There is still much unknown about how we are going to account for projects on the impact side of the portfolio and how we are going to account for the offset projects in the portfolio. I would propose that for the offset side, all transit projects that are implemented starting in 2027 are included in the offset side automatically. No debate on ownership of the offset, no debate on which region, it just counts as an offset. Similar for major trail projects, not just a sidewalk on a local street, we wouldn't count that, but a major multimodal trail or a major bikeway. We can do the same for EV charging infrastructure and for documented and actually implemented land use changes. And with this, I would still strongly advocate for more funding for transit across the state. I will continue to advocate for these ideas in the TAC, but it seems likely that particularly for the safety projects, this will require changes to the current legislation. I am also happy to meet with any of you to discuss this issue further. Thank you for allowing me time to testify today, and thank you all for your service to all of us.
Mr. Culver, thank you so much for your testimony. There are bills that are introduced. I believe I'm an author, I think, on at least two of them that deal with the greenhouse gas, it repeals it back, and that. I purposely chose not to have those bills in front of the committee today because I'm not sure that it would be as productive as just hearing, getting an update and hearing some of the testimony from people that are have testified that have to implement this. I'm glad that you were the final testifier on the list here because I wanted to have this conversation in the spirit of how do we handle with the legislation that we have and what improvements can we have made in the future here. So thank you very much for those couple suggestions. And, you know, to the stakeholders that are in the room or listening, that's what the legislation, this body needs. moving forward as and how we can help MnDOT and our local partners participate with that. Did you have a question? Oh, okay, and then so thank you for that. Stick around. I know we've got a couple of the engineers I mentioned. Mr. Solberg, I imagine you might want to just go to the table. We'll have some questions. And then we'll have amended a piece for any public testifiers, Ms. MJ Carpo. And I don't know if anybody else in the audience was looking to make public comments.
Mr. Chair, did you say a minute?
I said a minute, yes. Then we're going to have committee discussions and you're on the list. So anybody
else?
That
seems a little bit, Mr. Chair, that seems a little bit.
No. When you run the committee, Mr. Kraft, you can.
I am not running the committee. I'm just commenting when I'm seeing things that
you're,
I think are.
Right now I'm going to say you're out of order. We're having discussion. You can talk to me later if you have any problems with the way the committee's being run. We're putting together ideas here, and your comments have been registered.
Mr. Chair, it seems appropriate to have a balanced discussion on pro and con of this.
We're going to that.
Well, I'm just saying that the testifiers and Ms. Carpio.
Yeah, please proceed to the testifiers table if you want to make some public comments.
Yeah, she signed up to testify and everything. So if she can just make sure to have an appropriate amount of time, would be great.
Yeah, I asked for a minute. We've got time. I haven't cut anybody off. So let's proceed. You know, the whole point here was not to have a confrontational debate. I thought we could be mature adults about this. And so that's the way I would like to proceed. So please go with your testimony. I don't know that there's anybody else from the public that's looking to testify. And then we'll go to member questions, please. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Chair Kosnick and members of the Transportation Committee. My name is MJ Carpio, Executive Director of MOVE Minnesota. And thank you for the opportunity to testify. I think that there's been a lot of technical details that's been provided today, which is good. That is our agency doing the work that they're set out to do. And so I just want to bring a little of a different perspective and bring us back to the original intent of the legislation. And the bill, what the bill is asking us to do is to rethink how we do planning. You know, in practice, we start with projects and then justify it later. But what this bill is asking us to do is to measure the impacts on vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions, both. In other words, in non-technical terms, you know, we're asking, what is the effect on air pollution, and how are we perpetuating car-centric design or the perpetuation of single-use occupancy vehicle? And I just want to remind folks that, you know, MnDOT has the statewide multimodal transportation plan, which adopted a vehicle miles travel reduction goal. And also we have in statute a greenhouse gas reduction since 2007. And reducing transportation emissions to net zero by 2050 will require both addressing, yes, fuel types and electrifications, as folks have already said, but also vehicle miles traveled reduction and encouraging proper mode shift. And so, you know, when we talk about safety, we often talk about safety for fast-moving cars. We're not talking about pedestrians or transit riders, let alone public health. And we know that we induce demand when we expand lanes, only for congestion to come back later. Yet we assume that if we build good transit, that denser land use pattern and ridership won't follow. They will. And when we talk about economic development, job creation, and return on investment, we assume that public transit and active transportation won't deliver, but we know that they can and do. And when we talk about construction costs and affordability, especially right now, we know that MnDOT has a $2 billion maintenance backlog for the next 20 years, but we don't assume, you know, that public transit and active transportation are the most affordable, and they absolutely are. Lastly, you know, what this bill is asking us to do is asking us, are the transportation modes that we're planning for, is it helping us to meet our goals and what our evolving community needs are? You know, we know that in the metro, through public polling and engagement, we know that in the metro, 66% support a bill to improve transportation options in Minnesota using funding from state and federal government, which would otherwise go to highway expansion. And in the metro, that number increases. We know that 87% agree that everybody should be able to get where they need to go, even if they don't own a car. And so we need to factor all of these in and the changing perceptions and the changing needs of our communities throughout the metro and the state. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for your testimony. We have Representative Jones. Didn't have something, Chair Tapke? Oh, I thought you put your hand up. Representative Jones, and please introduce your companion today. I don't think you've been properly introduced.
Yes, thank you, Chair Kosnick. So this is Hans. This is my five-week-old, so apologies if you're hearing him do baby things. I have a number of questions, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this today. Honestly, it's brought to light some things that I think are useful for us to continue to make progress on reducing emissions and reducing sprawl. A first question, just really simple for MnDOT. Are transportation projects only highway projects? Are highway projects the only type of transportation project?
Mr. Solberg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, no. Clearly, transportation projects involve all modes. So highways, trails, transit are all various modes of transportation that would be included.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Thank you, Mr. Solberg. I had heard a couple of times that this law reduces projects, and I just want to make it clear that all transportation projects are projects. And so when we're talking about offsets, bike trails, transit, all those types of things are projects as well, and that's important for jobs, for economic development, and that we need to keep that in mind. Another thing is, can you help? You mentioned purpose and need. Can you help the committee understand what a project's purpose and need is a little bit more and when that comes into play?
Mr. Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Jones. Again, purpose and need is really what drives the result of a project. So what are you trying to solve and what is the problem? So what are you trying to achieve and what is the problem? That's really what it gets to.
All right, last follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a number of others, but with that, something that I've noticed with a number of our projects, both at city, county, state level, is oftentimes the agency is coming in with a solution, saying, "Oh, we need to add a lane, or we need to expand this." But that's been the default for many years. And so, if the true purpose and need is safety, I guess maybe another question is. Is slowing vehicles and a strategy for improving safety?
Mr. Stolberg?
Chair Kosnick and Representative Jones. Yes, there are many different ways to achieve safety benefits. Besides, I think the examples we've heard are grade separation, for instance. But it could also be slowing down traffic, which would be done in many different methods. It might be different designs, narrowing lanes, those sorts of things, or it may be different types of intersection, for instance, intersection designs that could improve safety as well. So,
awesome.
All right, Representative Jones, anything else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Solberg. One final comment is something I've been thinking about a lot is adjusting to new environments, right? I have this new baby, and now I have to figure out how to come to committee and do so while keeping him quiet. We now are in the environment of having climate change, and we, for the last 60, 80 years, we have been developing our communities by just by not thinking so intentionally about how we're sprawling outwards, and that adds to our maintenance costs. That adds to just costs increase in general when we do that, and so. This law is really trying to make us think differently. I've had to think differently with how I come to committee. This is making us think differently about the processes for when we develop projects. So when we're thinking about purpose and need, it's not the specific strategy of we need to do the default of expansion. Let's think about how do we redesign the lanes? How do we redesign the intersections? I also think that this presentation continues to stress the interrelatedness of land use and transportation. And I I think actually the way our committees are set up, we need to be expanding that. I think we should be actually including land use more in our conversations in the Transportation Committee because it's clear how interrelated they are. I also want to just thank the presenter for mentioning to us that we need to add more tools to their toolbox around electrification and other trading opportunities for offsets. I think those are clear and practical ideas that we should act on. So thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. We'll go to Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. The first one, when you're figuring these formulas out for vehicles, you know, like ADT, average daily traffic, and the exhaust, the tons per, are you taking into account how many vehicles are switching over to electric now? Has that been introduced into the formula?
Mr. Solberg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, yes, that is part of the process. We've utilized, for instance, I'll give you the example. With the new federal administration, they changed some of the emission standards for new vehicles. That was also calculated into, therefore, then our calculations and how we project forward. So, okay. Yes, we are.
And then follow up. Thank you. So these offsets that we're kind of discussing today, is it constitutional to use the trunk highway funds for the offsets?
Good question. Mr. Solberg?
Chair Kosnick, Representative Scraba. So those that have trunk highway use, right, so trunk highway purpose, could be different intersections, could be those sorts of activities, but when you get to transit, funding in a transit corridor, for instance, no trunk highway. Minnesota would not allow the use of those funds for that sort of activity. So that would have to come from a different source. Not everything that is on the offset list is trunk highway eligible.
Okay.
Real quick, please.
Thank you, Chair. So if we had to build a bike path or sidewalks, that would be eligible for trunk highway monies?
Mr. Solberg?
Chair and Representative Scraga. So some of those, yes. It depends upon the project and what is being built. So typically, yes, with our projects, when we're, say, for instance, going through Bagley, Minnesota, right, we reconstruct the sidewalks. Those are trunk highway purpose, right? They create curbs. They create drainage, flowage. So sidewalks are part of that as well. So.
I apologize. I wasn't clear. I'm not talking about fixing the highway, which you're already on. I'm talking in order to put four lanes where there's a two lane, we have to make other amends offsets for that. Can you use those dollars for sidewalks somewhere else, not on that project, or a trail somewhere else?
I was wondering where you were going with that. I thought it was clear. Can you use it on funds on a trail elsewhere?
Chair Kosnick, Representative Scraba, that one I would say we would have to look at the details of the project to determine. So is it being used along a trunk highway or is it off in the middle, let's just say, a different town? Mm-hmm. That is something we would have to investigate within the department to determine if that is a trunk highway eligible. My initial thought on that would be because it's off the system completely and not serving the trunk highway, that it would not be trunk highway purpose.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I gave you a couple, two extra, but that's good. Representative Kraft, will go next to you, then Rep. Fogelman, Cagle, and Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Solberg, how many projects right now are there in to you, to the TAC for evaluation? How many have there been? How many are there in to you? So we've heard a lot of concerns, but how many?
Mr. Solberg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft. So right now the TAC is responsible for validating the assessment that local partners would take place. We have not seen any individual projects come to the TAC. We are only aware of some projects that are maybe being worked on, but nothing that has come, that is funded, that has moved forward to bring those assessments to the TAC.
Okay.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So zero so far.
And if I could just interrupt for just one quick second. We have about 15 minutes, so if you, I'll try to allow as many follow-ups as you can, but if you have a couple questions, then maybe just throw them out at once and send to the other members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will you provide, you know, there's been concern about offsets. Will you work with stakeholders to provide assistance on figuring out this offset issue, especially for the first few projects?
Mr. Stolberg?
Chair Kosnick, Representative Kraft. Yes, I think that is fully our intent. We recognize that this is a new process. As with any process, the department offers training and additional resources. So as this moves forward into the future, the department will be assisting those project proposers to understand the process, identify those potential offsets, work with community partners.
Representative Kraft, last
Thank
one.
You. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there was discussion about MnDOT saying that we can't do as many projects. I want to ask you about that because my question is it that you can't do the same number of projects, or projects may need to look a little bit different? There may be a project, you know, if you want to do just the way we used to always do it, which, by the way, this wasn't working, right? Especially if you look at the backlog that MnDOT has on road maintenance. So is it that we have to do less projects, or that their projects now need to be looking a little bit different?
Mr. Solberg, please.
Chair Kosnick, Representative Kraft. So maybe the best way to answer that question is to say, looking purely at dollar amounts, if we do not do the same type of projects, we may potentially be able to do more projects like roundabouts or J-turns that could provide benefits to the system. If we're looking at doing the same, I think, as you just said, as we always had, and do interchanges, we're going to have less dollars available to be able to do that because, number one, interchanges are much more expensive than, say, a J-turn. May have different benefits, different impacts, but ultimately that question is kind of a two-part.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, if there are alternatives that are cheaper, that is where the department would make the investment, assuming it meets the purpose and need of a project.
Thank you. We've got 5 other members. Real quick, this is your fourth follow-up, and you've interrupted me twice, so I didn't appreciate that, so wrap it up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Solberg, I have a question and then some comments. I'll put them together and ask you to comment at the end. Mr. Chair, if you would stop interrupting me and everyone and all of this, there would be more time for us to speak, right? This was my law in 2023. Right, and I've been asking very professionally what the process is, and you've been reacting in an unprofessional way. So I would appreciate the time to make my comments. Do you want to shut me down? Your chair, you're welcome to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I was going to talk a little bit about safety, about other options, but Representative Jones did that quite effectively. You know, this is what we're asking to be done is hard, right? I get it. And we need to think differently. And so I think what we're hearing is thinking differently, how, and the challenges with doing that. That said, there were some comments made by Mr. Pettis about the portfolio model that I think had some interesting merit, right? I will say, on this law, I have been open at any point in time to talk to folks, incorporate changes. We did it from 23 to 24. We did it last year. The timing of this coming at this point, this late in the session, to suggest changes are needed seems rushed, maybe not the responsible way of making changes. That said, I think, you know, you're struggling with the portfolio, but I think some of the things that he said of thinking about how we can incorporate transit projects automatically into things. This law was never meant to satisfy, to reduce emissions in transportation all on its own, right? There certainly is things that need to happen in terms of electrification, other things that are not totally within the scope of this law. So I would encourage you to focus on the things, the intent of this, and also the vehicle miles traveled portion. And I thank you for your time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Or no, we're going to go to Fogelman first. Representative Fogelman.
Well, that's what Thank I said. You, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. We talked about offsets a bunch. I was looking at page 9 of the presentation, and it says offset projects have costs of their own. Offsets require more coordination in new areas. And then it says accounting for offsets in a new area that has not been developed. What is the process for figuring out the accounting for the offsets? And, I mean, how long does that take to develop to get the cost for the projects?
Mr. Solberg, makes sense to you?
Mr. Chair, if I could ask for just clarification, is it about the timeline it takes to figure out what an offset might be and then ultimately costs? Yes, yeah, so Chair, Representative, I think this is the kind of the elusive kind of thing that's out there. So if I ask my council right now what does it cost to develop a BRT, they wouldn't be able to necessarily tell me that. They would have to go through part of that process of developing that particular project to figure it out. But they would probably tell me an estimate of 50 to 70 million, for instance. So they could give me a rough estimate. When it comes to calculating that, we've been able to move pretty quickly, for instance, with some of the offsets that are already there with existing infrastructure, because we're not the only ones in the United States doing this. We have other states. We have USDOT that had done a lot of work on this, and so we can rely on some of that previous research to help us calculate, and we would be able to, for instance, a project in project development, so a regular transportation highway project, takes a minimum of 5 years, right? That's just from the time you identify some money till you build it. And I'm sure many people in here have complained about how long it's taking to build a particular project. It's been a generation or something. So when we get to that timeline, we think we would be able to fit within any project proposer's understanding of their project.
Great, thank you. Who did I say next? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So not necessarily a question in here. I just kind of want to maybe guide people and think about this from a different point of view. You know, I think that we have to start thinking more holistically and more long-term. You know, right now we're talking about the short-term costs of these projects, and we're not actually looking at the entire cost savings to Minnesota. You know, we're at risk because the environment around us is changing. You know, our state sits in a hail, in one of the most active hail corridors of the country, and it's one of the top drivers of insurance claims. You know, the frequency that we're getting hit with these storms and the intensity is completely, you know, skyrocketing. The Twin Cities Metro is experiencing more intense rainfalls, leading to flash flooding. Not only, like, a single storm, insurers can process thousands of just auto claims. And then you have homeowners claims. So it's not theoretical. These things are driving up costs, and so this is just simple math. So when more claims happen, it costs more to repair, and that means things go up. So higher insurance payouts equals higher insurance premiums, and so that's where climate fits in. The storms are making it more intense, and it's really introducing uncertainty, and so the insurance companies are pricing based on their projected future risks. And so right now we're paying way more insurance than we ever have. And this isn't just something that homeowners or auto owners are dealing with. I was just looking at the MCIT rates, and in 2024, the Minnesota County Intergovernmental Trust raised premiums 36%, according to their report. And so we're looking at costs going up across the board for everybody. And I had just texted Aaron Cocking that represents the insurance industry, asking him what the number one cause of claims are. And he says it's these, the report that he sent over to me is severe connective storms are the thing that's causing our insurance rates to go up. And that's because of climate change. And I know some people don't believe that climate change exists or, you know, that it doesn't because they don't believe in science, but you know, we really, this is a cost containment policy. And so when we're talking about the costs of these projects, what's the cost to not do the projects? You know, it's Minnesotans are paying more because the risk is more. And if we really want to lower costs of insurance, then we need to lower the risk. And so that means smarter infrastructure and addressing climate drivers. This is one area where we can address climate drivers. And not only is it, emissions, it's not abstract. It's directly affecting household costs like insurance, like public health, and property taxes. So I would really encourage people to start like thinking a little bit bigger. Think about the return on investment. Think about how these policies can intertwine if you're building sustainable roads and communities and also fighting climate change at the same time, you're going to reduce your costs, people. So I just really think that we need to stop looking so narrow-mindedly and thinking about the costs right now and really think about the dollars and cents and the lives down the road. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Cagle. Representative Murphy. Oh no, I'm sorry, Bjorn. I keep pushing you off. You're back up there. Go ahead, Representative Olson.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much for recognizing me, Mr. Chair. I've been waiting all day for this. So I first joined the Transportation Committee 5 years ago, and we had a presentation from MnDOT then, and it said we have a $20 billion maintenance funding gap deficit over the next 20 years. And it's now 5 years later. We spent $18 billion in a surplus a couple years ago, and the Democrats raised taxes by $10 billion in this state in the last couple years. And good news, we still have a $20 billion maintenance deficit for transportation. What the heck happened? Our tab fees are through the roof. You're spending what used to be $50 to $70 a year to register a $30,000 vehicle, you're now spending $400 a year to register that vehicle. Where is this money gone? Where has the $10 billion in taxes that the state of Minnesota has raised on the taxpayers, where has it gone? Now, frankly, I believe that we have sold a really bad bill of goods to the state of Minnesota. We just heard today that these projects are going to increase costs to taxpayers by 30 to 50%. And not only that, we heard concerns about safety. People who would previously have been safe because their community could look at a project and say, we need to fix this, people are dying. Now they're gonna have to buy an electric bus in order to save someone's life. And I think that's a real shame. I think it's silly. And 2 years ago, actually 4 years, for the last 4 years, I've been touting, saying, hey, this is going to raise costs. This is going to be dangerous. You know what? It's not just hard, Representative Kraft. It's expensive, it's dangerous, and in many ways, this is going to be impossible to do. But my question is, it's my understanding that if it's a local city project, the city's paying for it. If it's a county project, the county's paying for it. And if it's a state project, the state's paying for it. Is that correct?
Mr. Solberg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, yes, if you're referring to the offset portion of a project, yes, MnDOT has included that in our cost participation manual that locally initiated projects would be, the offsets would be borne by the local proposer.
Rep. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if one of my communities needs to build a road because we're expanding our town and it reaches that threshold, they need to then offset mitigate these carbon emissions because apparently Minnesota's big enough to affect climate change on its own. We can make it happen. We're going to reduce insurance rates on our own as a state of 5.5 million people. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But my city, let's say, wants to build a road, and they have to now convince another community to build a trail with their money so that we can make a portfolio together? That doesn't make sense to me. I don't think another community is going to be willing to pay for that. Do you believe that another community is going to be able to pay or willing to pay? Maybe they want to build an electric bus and then we'll tag team on that. Can you explain how that portfolio aspect is going to work?
Mr. Solberg?
Chair Kosnick, Representative Olson. So the question is really, would a local entity want to pay for an improvement in another community? And I think the answer to that is that depends upon the local entity that's proposing the project. As you initiated or as you mentioned, if it's a drastic safety project and they can't overcome the offsets in their own community, yet they're still interested in those potential life-saving aspects, they may choose, but that would be their choice. That is not something that's dictated by the process.
Thank you. It remains to be seen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll leave it at that. I think, like I said, this is not going to be just hard. It's going to be expensive, dangerous, in many ways, incredibly impossible. We've raised taxes too much, and now we know, we've heard it here today, 30 to 50% more expensive projects in this state. We're not going to build another state in this road in this state.
Thank you. Two members left on the list, and then I do want to move on as quickly as we can so that the other issue gets enough time. Representative Murphy, as concise as you can, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start with a question, then I'll have a couple comments. But, you know, so if the cost of roads go up and the funding goes down, do we build more roads or less roads?
Mr. Solberg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, typically the answer to that would be we build less.
We agree on that. We agree on that. Let me talk to you a little bit about what everybody said today. When the people came up and talked to you, they said, this is not popular. They talked about the added cost they're going to have for their communities. In one place, Anoka said it was up to 72% more cost. If the cost goes up and the funding goes down or stays the same, what happens? We're going to build less roads. This is about building less roads. This is about driving less. That's what this is about. You know, over time, you know, we've all talked about this science and climate change, and we say we all know this to be true, but we don't know it to be true. There's plenty of evidence that's coming out every day on science, and your science is always to the point where we know the science, and now we can forever rule on the science that we know. CO2 right now lags temperature by 150 years. That's new science. It really dwarfs what you're talking about for temperature. Temperature has always preceded CO2 levels. Always. There's researches that will tell you that. The problem that we have here is our research only comes from universities, agencies, and stakeholders who profit. That's the problem. That's why what you're going to get down the road is you're going to get the real information, and then we'll have a lot of egg on our face because this is not true science. This is not the end all. You know, it takes 8 million pounds of soil to tip over to make a truck battery. 8 million pounds. Our CO2, a new test just came out and said our CO2 is already saturated. Have you seen that? It's already saturated. What are we going to obtain with all this work we're doing in terms of reducing the temperature, which is the goal? The bottom line, it's not true. This is going to explode costs for Minnesota. If you want to see a true explanation of what's happening, listen to people that did the research. That did the research and are saying that isn't what the research said. The documentary Climate the Movie is what you want to watch. Because it'll tell you that what you've seen from universities, agencies, and stakeholders is not the true information, and it will cost us a lot. This is tip of the iceberg of all things climate. This is one of the most expensive things we'll endure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. We're going to close it up with Co-Chair Tabke, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'll make this quick. Just a couple notes. One is that just on highway purposes. Just want to make sure everybody in the room is clear. The legislature decides the highway purposes. It's it is a legislatively directed piece on things, so folks don't get to, the legislature gets to decide what highway purposes are on things. I want, my question that I want to make sure that we are focusing on is that you had a slide that started with when this process starts and how this goes, and you talked about how, Mr. Solberg, you talked about how with the cost on things, you want to make sure that we are identifying the offsets and those kinds of things early on in the process. So, like, the projects that we've had, the county commissioners and other folks have talked about today, are ones that are already, like, basically set and done. Like, I have, like, Highway 65, I have major concerns about the costs of those projects and what that is there. 282 and 169 in Jordan, it's really, really expensive projects. It, and if these kinds of things have been, I think that what Representative Kraft is getting at with this bill and what I would like to get at with this bill is thinking differently about how we approach these big projects and solve these big problems. And so, like, with Highway 65, for example, the offsets for this baked-in project would be great for that. But if it started at the beginning, would there be, and what would they be, ways that these offsets could have been mitigated in the design process before these costs become realized? And you don't need to use a specific project on things, but are there ways to, in the design phase, to meet the goals that of safety goals, of getting from point A to point B goals, ways that the design process can mitigate these offsets so that they aren't additional costs to the project?
Mr. Solberg?
Okay, I got to figure out how to answer this. Chair Kosnick, Chair Tabke, maybe I'll back out a little bit and say, in the metropolitan region, the Metropolitan Council is responsible for planning, and they are also potentially responsible, and if you are not aware, it sounds like with the next solicitation, they will be associating offsets with it. So that's in a high level. In the design aspect of a project, if the purpose, the true purpose and the need of the project is addressed, it can be addressed in many different ways. So I can take an intersection safety and I can say, well, that's a safety improvement to put in an interchange. Yes, I can say that. I can also potentially say that adding a signal may be more detrimental to safety than not. I might be able, in that same round, be able to say a roundabout or a J-turn is our safety. It really becomes a matter of how much are you placing on the value of, say, for instance, safety versus mobility and these other components that make up the complexity of the transportation system. So it could potentially be feasible to develop a project that doesn't require offsets.
Rep. Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Solberg, for that answer. Like, I think as we talk through this, especially this bill, and making sure that we are looking to the future as to how this is implemented and how this is enacted and how this is utilized in the real world, folks need to make sure that we are looking at that design phase and making sure that just safety, just mobility are not the only things that are being considered, and that greenhouse gases and our effect on future climate change is something that is, and current climate change is something that is also considered in the cost of a project. And so that's what this bill is asking to do and how we get things done in our community. So I just want to thank Representative Kraft for all of his work on this. I know he's done tons of work. And as someone was talking about the amount of transparency with this, and I don't know in transportation we've ever had more discussion about a bill than we've had in those greenhouse gas bills. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. And we're going to go over about 5 minutes. So if we can have the thank you, MnDOT, for being with us and the other testifiers. So we'll move on to, just for introduction purposes, Representative Sudinski has, if you want to follow along, House File 4807. Do a quick introduction, if you don't mind, and then we'll go. We've got some testifiers, John Cunningham and Michael Bohr. So, Representative Swinsky, we're not even moving your bill. Just tell us what it does, and then we'll proceed with the discussion.
Certainly, Chair Kosnick.
If the other testifiers can proceed to the testifier table, speed it up, please. Representative Swedinsky.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. So House File 4807 is pretty straightforward. It for one, creates a preemption when it comes to local ordinances, when it comes to aggregate and aggregate mining. You know, if you think of from a natural resource standpoint, the utilization of these is really a state asset, and when it comes to development, so that's a big part of the bill. And then also from a mapping standpoint, we all understand that the aggregate mapping across the state is a very important aspect of understanding where the resources are. And so we put a certain amount of money towards that, especially in the center, seven county metro. Visiting with any transportation, you guys understand that better than most, that is a key aspect to understanding where the gravel is, where the clay is, for those resources for the build out of our continued infrastructure improvements across the state. And you know, those are the couple of the major parts, and then also from some weight restriction projects as well. With that, we do have a couple of testifiers here that can speak a little bit more in depth from the industry, and yeah, I appreciate the chance to come before you.
Thank you, Representative Swedinsky. Who wants to go first, Mr. Cunningham or Mr. Bohr?
I can start. I'd be happy to start. Thank you. My name is John Cunningham. I'm with the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota. I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on the status of Minnesota's aggregate resources. I'd also like to thank the co-chairs for bringing this issue forward, and I'd like to thank Representative Swedinsky for authoring the bill, along with the staff and others that contributed. On average, Minnesota requires 8 tons of aggregate materials per year per person to sustain our quality of life. That's 30 million tons per year needed in the metro area alone. That's 47 million tons per year needed for the state of Minnesota. At 22 tons per truck, that would require 1.3 million fully loaded trucks just for the metro and 2.1 million trucks for the state of Minnesota. 2.1 million trucks lined up end to end would circle the globe. We use a lot of aggregates. We need a lot of aggregates. Right now, we're speeding towards a time when there will be no rock, sand, gravel, or crushed stone produced in the metro area. None. We'll be out. And we're getting to that point fast. We're now at the precipice of that. If you care about affordable housing, if you care about infrastructure, economic development, traffic congestion, or especially climate change, then you should care about exhaustion of our aggregate resources in the metro and throughout the state. About 67% of every cubic yard of concrete and about 90% of every ton of asphalt is comprised of rock, sand, gravel, or crushed stone. These are literally the building blocks of our communities. Without them, we don't have grocery stores, we don't have schools, we don't have places of worship, we don't have hospitals or homes. If the supply of construction aggregates is halted, everything else comes to a standstill. And it's not a matter of if we run out in the metro, it is a matter of when. We know that. Our organization, along with others, has been sounding the alarm bells for the last several years. In response, the legislature mandated a task force in 2017 to study the issue of aggregate resources and to make recommendations. That report was published in 2018. Last year, the Office of the Legislative Auditor provided a report that referenced the 2018 task force report and noted, unfortunately, that little, if any, of the recommendations had been implemented. The University of Minnesota, along with the Minnesota Geological Survey and the Metropolitan Council, conducted an inventory of aggregate resources in the metro area. That report projected that aggregate resources in the metro area would be exhausted by 2029, 3 years from now. Now, that report was published in the year 2000. It definitely needs to be updated to give us a better understanding of projected exhaustion. But again, we've asked for that inventory to be updated, and we're still waiting to see that happen. Now, that inventory, by the way, that is a tool for governmental agencies. In the past, there's been some confusion about whether or not that's a tool for industry. It's not so much for our purposes. It's for the governmental agencies to be able to plan and to program. Local supply of aggregates is critical to the vitality of every community, and including the metro area, and perhaps more importantly, because of the volume of material that we use in the metro, the resulting increased cost in both emissions and dollars is higher because of the volume. The further aggregates need to be trucked, the more expensive they become, and the more CO2 is emitted. Accessing sources of aggregates as close as possible to their use is essential in our ability to keep costs down, to minimize emissions, and to reduce traffic. Transport is the major source of cost and emissions associated with construction aggregates. The emissions for mining and sizing and washing the aggregates is relatively low. There's no mystery how our industry works. We take rock, sand, and gravel out of the ground. We size the particles. We wash them with plain water. And for stone like granite or limestone, we'll run them through mechanical crushers to reduce them to a workable size. The cost and emissions to produce the materials is dwarfed when we get beyond 20 miles of transport. Trucking bulky and heavy materials is the major cost when we get past that point. The cost of trucking becomes greater than the cost of production as we get around 20 miles in distance. And of course, that can change depending on the traffic conditions, but that's the general guideline we use. When we reach that point, the construction aggregates for the metro area in particular, we can expect greater economic and environmental costs for those materials. And this is coming at a time when our industry is working very hard on the path towards net zero. As an industry, our goal is net zero by 2050, along with the states. And we're actively on that journey today. In fact, we supported legislation in 2023 requiring submittal of environmental product declarations, EPDs, for construction materials. We supported that. And that's on, that law passed. It's now in, it's going in place this year on state-led projects, some state-led projects. The ready-mix concrete industry is on the leading edge of using EPDs and gathering data and on making adjustments to our projects, products that lower their greenhouse gas emissions. And we've committed our industry to lowering CO2 emissions, as I said, by 2050. But that becomes more and more difficult when we get outside of that 20-mile radius. With the clarifying language in HF 4807, we estimate that we can expect a reduction of nearly 6 million vehicle miles traveled per year, that's per year, by fully implementing the 2018 construction material special permit. We estimate it would reduce CO2 emissions by about 10,000 metric tons per year. This permit only applies to hauling rock, sand, gravel, stone, concrete, and asphalt. That's what it was written for. Confusion over the current language requires a clarification, and that clarification we've been asking for several years. It's in this bill today. For us fully realize the potential, we need to have that clarification. The chilling effect is that folks won't use it if they're not sure if it's going to be applied. It's in the best interest of every community to have local access. In order to avoid that, the cost of trucking and potential disruptions to supply chain, we need to have those materials where they're able to be mined, available to the local communities. Section 4 of 4807 prevents local communities from moving the goalposts once the aggregate mining intentions have been revealed. It also inhibits shadow bans on aggregate mining, which we've seen more and more lately, particularly those that are based on unfounded fears with no basis in science or fact. It's also critical that we stretch our existing resources by recycling every bit of concrete and asphalt possible, which means prevention of limitations on their use without reason, scientific justification. Knee-jerk reactions to unsubstantiated fears must not interfere with responsible use of materials like RCA, recycled concrete aggregate, and RAP, recycled asphalt pavement. Proposed restrictions, both at the state and local level, on use of recycled materials must be given exhaustive and critical study before implementation. Now, I would tell you this, for this, MnDOT is very good at recycling materials. And many folks may not know this, but when we reconstruct a pavement, we're reusing most of those materials back into the pavement, or back into the pavement structure at least. So In closing, let me just say that we need to make sure that that inventory is updated, and we need to make sure that all these other items are addressed. Now, there's more that we could get into with the Aggregate Resource Task Force recommendations. We understand there will be opposition to this bill, but it's 10 minutes to midnight. We've got to do something before it's too late. It's time to seriously press for sincere responses from those that are opposed. It's a difficult issue, but imagine how much more difficult it's going to be once we run out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Mr. Bohr, we have about a minute or two. There is another committee, I think, coming in after us, so but we want to hear your comments. So thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can be brief. For the record, my name is Michael Baer. I am the Assistant Commissioner of Engineering Services for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to provide MnDOT's technical perspective on the issues of aggregate resources. Minnesota depends heavily on reliable, long-term supply of aggregate for our transportation system. Statewide, we use an estimated 8 million tons of aggregate annually for asphalt, 13 million tons for concrete, and about 25 million tons for grading and base materials. Now, these materials are the foundation to the roads, bridges, buildings, and infrastructure that support our economy. Minnesota also leads in recycling, as Mr. Cunningham mentioned. Roughly 70% of our base aggregate statewide is reused, and in the metro area, we recycle about 95% of the base material. Recycled asphalt and concrete aggregates also contribute significantly to extending aggregate resources. However, accessible aggregate supplies in the metro are becoming constrained. If the region relied solely on currently available resources, supply may, and I stress the word may, be exhausted in about 10 years. With continued importation from outside the metro, as currently is the case with some of the more durable aggregates needed for concrete and asphalt, we estimate 15 to 20 years of remaining supply. As an illustration, and depending on the size of trucks, it would take 40,000 to 65,000 truckloads to haul each million tons of aggregate. If it becomes necessary to transport aggregate supplies from non-metro sources into the region, that is a significant increase in not only cost, but also vehicle mile traveled and greenhouse gas emissions. So updating the DNR resource inventory would support our long-term planning, although I defer to the DNR as they would be the entity that would conduct that study. So MnDOT appreciates the opportunity to provide technical information to support the legislature's understanding of aggregate supply, material needs, and transportation system impacts, and I'm happy to answer any technical questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the committee staying over a little bit. I know that there was, in your handouts, there was some other important information and questions. Does anybody have any particular question? Or thank you. I apologize you had to wait as long as you did, but we know that it's an important issue, and thank you for bringing it forward to us. Representative Swedinski, do you have any closing comments?
Certainly. Just appreciate the chance to come before the committee. It is important. And when we talk about exhausting resources, oftentimes the resource isn't necessarily exhausted, but it is covered up. And so when you're looking at the mapping and the importance of those things, of understanding where that resource is, that once a housing development is built or a mall is built over the top of a gravel pit, it's essentially lost. And so if we can get those mined out, you look at what's gone on in Maple Grove, you know, you've had a vast majority of ag resources been mined out of that area, and then you've seen development go over the top. And I think it's not necessarily of saying no, but let's get what we need out of it first, and then we can allow development to happen. And so appreciate the opportunity to come before, and would appreciate the consideration of this bill.
Thank you for coming to committee and presenting kind of on short notice, but kind of tied into the previous greenhouse gas discussion, and I know it's a critical issue for the aggregate industry. So thank you, members. We'll be back on Monday. Chair Tapke. So thank you. The meeting is adjourned.